Okay, we're going to get started. Karen's. Okay, so recording is all set. So I call this meeting to order. Just a little announcement. We will be talking later in the meeting about moving back to meeting in person. So be thinking about that. We'll discuss that later. And because the roll call is so cumbersome, I do combine items if I'm able to. And if you want anything pulled out of that, please let me know. If you need more discussion on an item, it's just for ease of these meetings. So with that, I would be open for there are no changes to the agenda, right, Karen? So I would be open to a motion to adopt the agenda.
Madam Chair, I'll make that motion to adopt the agenda. Mike?
I'll second that.
Seconded by Jane. Any questions or comments? Patty will take the roll, so unmute yourself and be ready.
Saria?
Aye.
Jane?
Aye.
Mary?
Aye.
Melissa?
Aye.
George?
Aye.
Lisa?
Aye.
Mike?
Aye.
Dave?
Aye.
Lee?
Aye.
Ed?
Aye.
Randy?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patty. Item number 3 is approval of 2 different sets of minutes. They were in your packet, pages 3 and 7, the March 16th minute meetings from our board meeting, and also the March 16th minutes from the personnel committee. If there's no objection, we can take those together, and I would need a motion.
So moved. Okay, I'll second it.
And Ed was...
Who moved it?
Zuria.
Okay, got it.
And a second...
I saw Ed waving.
Lee woke up.
Okay, Lee. I've got it.
Sorry, Lee. So, either one. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Patty will run the roll.
Saria.
Aye.
Jane.
Aye.
Mary.
Aye.
Melissa.
Aye.
George?
Aye.
Lisa?
Aye.
Mike?
Aye.
Dave?
Aye.
Lee? Lee?
Aye.
Ed?
Aye.
Randy?
Aye.
That's everyone.
Thanks, Patty. Moving on to item number 4, public open forum. I don't believe we have anyone interested in addressing the board tonight. So we'll move on to number 5, the financials. We are able, if it's okay with everyone, to take 5.1 and 5.2 together. The bills were emailed to you. Hope you got a chance to peek at them, as well as the financial reports. Those come via email.
I move for approval, Madam Chair.
I'll second.
Ed and Jane, any discussion on those? Hearing none, thank you, Patty, for running the roll.
Zuria.
Hi.
Jane.
Aye.
Mary.
Aye.
Melissa.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Lisa.
Aye.
Mike.
Aye.
Dave.
Aye.
Lee.
Aye.
Ed.
Aye.
Randy.
Aye.
Thanks, Patty. Moving on to the next item, the audit overview, page 9 in your packet. Nancy's with us tonight. This is her third or possibly even more times going over this with various groups of the board. So she was in finance just before this meeting and then an outtake meeting. I believe we had that last week, a few of us with her. So thanks, Nancy, for joining us again. And I'm just going to turn it over to you for the overview.
All right. And I'm going to share my screen for the one-page summary that we have. If I can find it on my screens. Move it over. Sorry. All right. Can we all see that? Okay, so this is just a quick one-page summary because, like Lisa mentioned, I have met with other groups of the board. I want to start out by thanking everyone for giving me just a few minutes to go over the results of our audit tonight. Starting out, I'd like to thank the library for receiving an unmodified or a clean audit opinion, indicating that everything was fairly stated based on the results of our audit. We did have one audit finding, and this is not new to the library. It's the finding that you have received before, the lack of segregation of accounting duties. And this is there because of the size of the staff in your finance department. So there are some overlapping duties. And as an auditor, it's good for me to sit in these meetings and hear that you are looking at financial information and approving bills and expenditures as you go. That helps mitigate some of that risk associated with that lack of segregation of accounting duties. And then very high level, looking at your revenues and expenses, we'll take a look at this chart. So for the year, revenues were down about $466,000 or 4.6%. It had to do with fewer grants received, especially in the Arts and Cultural Legacy grant. There were fewer expenses related to COVID-related closures, so you had fewer revenues coming in as well. Expenses decreased about $480,000 or 4.9% for the year. And part of that had to do with that legacy grant and fewer expenses related there. And then also your pension expense. So that has to do with the allocation from the state of Minnesota that the library receives, your proportionate share, and then some amortization. So it fluctuates year to year. And this year did decrease about $360,000. Overall, your net position increased about $160,000, and on this chart, you can see that your unrestricted net position increased about $442,000 for the year, or 6.6%. And then another chart on the page takes a look at that net position, and in total, again, it did increase about $160,000. We have three categories presented here. The top portion is the net investment in capital assets, so that's your materials, all of your collection that you have, any equipment, less any accumulated depreciation. So using up of those assets over their useful life, that number did decrease for the year, and that had to do with just fewer capital purchases during 2020 than what you've seen in previous years. And those assets continue to depreciate, accounting for the decrease there. The middle skinny green line relates to restricted amounts set aside for specific purposes. And then finally, the bottom again is that unrestricted number that I've already touched on did increase $442,000 for the year, basically just based on operations of the library and a big picture look at things. So questions on any of that or anything that you'd like a little bit more detail on?
Does anyone have any questions for Nancy? And as always, we always open that audit outtake up to the board. People are welcome to join us for that. And we went over it in our finance, and that meeting is open if people want to sit through it. I noticed a couple board members did. So any questions? Okay, this is an action item. So we would need a motion to approve the audit.
So move.
Second.
Lee and Mary, any other discussion or questions? I just really want to thank Nancy and our staff for putting this all. It's a unique year, as Karen mentioned earlier. We're finding that in a lot of the audits that we're having and the work that we do. So thank you for the work on this.
Before I go tonight, too, I would like to thank Karen and her staff. Like you've all mentioned, it was a unique year, but they were still very well prepared for us.
Thanks, Nancy. And Patty, if you'll run the roll.
Right. Zuria.
Hi.
Jane.
Hi.
Mary.
Hi.
Melissa.
Hi.
George.
Hi.
Lisa.
Hi.
Mike.
Hi.
Dave.
Hi.
Okay, got it. Lee.
Hi.
Ed.
Hi.
Randy.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. Bye-bye. Moving on to item 5.4, page 11 in your packet is about annual review. As a board, we always review this annually, the unassigned fund balance.
So the annual review is done annually?
Yes, the annual review is done annually.
Wow.
And I'll turn this over to Amy or Karen, who will be much more eloquent than I am.
So the unassigned fund balance from the 2020 audit reports is $5,727,388, and that number comes right off of the financial statements. From there, we adjust the unassigned fund balance by pre-approved board board-approved, I guess, assignments. This year, there are four, so there's a couple approvals for the 2021 budget. We're also reducing it by the 2020 operating surplus that is going to supplant the 2022 budget. And then finally, the last adjustment is that 2020 audit of the HRA custodial fund. So we set that up and separated that out. So there's an overall reduction to the unassigned fund balance of $1.167 million. So when we take that and apply it to the 2021 operating budget, our 3 months of reserves that are required comes out to be $2.382 million, leaving our number of months in reserves at 5.74. And this will be as of December 31st, 2020. And that last calculation on this page that you'll see is the amount in excess over that 3 months of reserve at $2.177 million.
Is there any questions or comments? We also reviewed this in our finance committee prior to this meeting.
Madam Chair, so this means if we have to shut the doors, COVID comes back, whatever, this is what we have left to pay staff and expenses, unassigned, right?
So the unassigned funds, Mary, are the monies that aren't assigned to any specific purpose. So that $2.177 million is what is in excess that isn't assigned to anything.
But again, it could be spent for continuing salaries or benefits or whatever.
Yes, used for general purposes. Yep.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions? This also is an action item, so I would need a motion to approve the annual review of the annual unassigned fund balance. Mary moves. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, thanks, Patty, for running the roll.
Syria.
Aye.
Jane.
Aye.
Mary.
Aye.
Melissa. Melissa? I wonder
she's
if her connection.
She's muted.
Oh, she's...
Here we go. Melissa? I bet she's having trouble with her connection.
Yes. Oh, there she is.
Aye.
George?
Aye.
Sorry, I don't know what's going on.
Lisa?
Aye.
Mike?
Aye.
Dave?
Aye.
Lee?
Aye.
Ed?
Aye.
Randy?
Aye.
That's it.
Thank you. Melissa, your connection's a little sketchy. You freeze up every once in a while and you're a little, but we got you. Moving on to number 6, consent agenda. These generally can be taken as one. We're on page 13 and 33 in your packet. So I'd be open to a motion.
So moved, Randy.
Second, Ed.
Any questions or comments about those?
Madam Chair, this is Dave. I'm going to have to leave, but my vote is aye. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Dave. Have a good night.
I'm open for coming back to meeting together too. So.
Okay. We'll keep you posted.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Patty.
You're muted, Patty.
Okay, Zuria.
Aye.
Jane.
Aye.
Mary.
Aye.
Melissa.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Lisa.
Aye.
Mike.
Aye.
Lee.
Aye.
Ed.
Aye.
Randy.
Aye.
Thank you. We have no communications under number 7 and no presentations under number 8. That takes us to number 9, a number of different reports, and I'm going to just turn this section over to Karen. She has a number of things she'd like to highlight. And please ask her questions if needed.
Yep. So pause along the way. So under the executive director report, I did want to point out that the leadership support team did go over the diversity, equity, and inclusion committee survey recommendations that we discussed in February and ranked them in order for our strategic plan. And the one that came out on top in the people section was recruitment processes and job descriptions and promoting training opportunities were 1 and 2. And that is what we just wrote that LSTA grant for that you just approved. So if we get funded to do that, that came directly from that work. And I thought it'd be worth pointing that out. In the management reports, we have an update on the UPSLA opening. We do have someone who has applied for a shared position to replace Wanda Erickson. Not that anyone could truly replace Wanda Erickson, if you've ever met her, but we're not quite ready to make a public announcement yet, but we are in the process of getting that person started before Wanda retires, so there'll be a smooth transition there. And that will be a shared branch scenario. So we will be doing one more shared branch. It's worth pointing out that Wanda has been at the UPSLA Library as long as there has been an UPSLA Public Library at Great River. So filling her shoes is not an easy task, but she is setting us up for success. And we're very grateful that she has been with us all this time. Any questions about the director's report, the management report, or the building reports before I go into the sustainability plan?
Karen, this is Ed. Do we do anything for an employee that's
that's been there that long and has done that many things for a library. I mean, if you're there 2, 3, 5 years is different than somebody that's been there for that duration.
Yeah, she's been there 34 years. There will be a party put on by the Friends of the Library. In spite of Wanda's protest, she would prefer not to have a party. It will be on June 4th. So if you're in the Uppsala area on June 4th, you can probably get some cake. We do have a staff recognition policy too. So all of our retirement gifts follow that policy. If I'm not mistaken, they get a gift certificate. And then there's also a certificate that goes out from the board. So yeah, we do have recognition. And Wanda isn't looking for recognition. I can speak very highly of Wanda because I knew Wanda before I worked at Great River and she was my kids' librarian. So she's going to be a tough person to see leave the organization. She's just very grounded and has brought a lot of us along with her.
Yeah, we just had a recognition for somebody that worked for the county for 43 years and she's not retiring. She just got the, I don't know what they call it. And she even wanted no pictures, but that's their choice.
Yeah. They twisted Wanda's arm. I think the city wanted to do a Wanda Erickson recognition day, and I'm pretty sure that's not happening. She's also the school librarian, so she's retiring from that job as well. So Uppsala is losing the librarian they've always had. It's going to be a hard transition, I think, just because she's going to be leaving a huge hole, but we have a very talented staff person who's familiar with the community who will be able to step in, and I think that's going to be as good as we can get.
So that's phenomenal. I mean, if there are any board members, sorry Randy, but I barely know where Uppsala is. I'm looking it up on my phone right now.
All roads lead to Uppsala if you ask Wanda.
I'm sure she would be. I would love to meet her. So I don't know. I have a funeral that day. But so if a few board members could show up, I think, Randy, if you're in the area.
If you know where Bertram is, you can say
Okay.
I've been told by Uppsala residents that one of their proudest speaking points about Uppsala is it is a half hour to any stoplight from their community.
Wow, I've been familiar with Uppsala for years and I never heard that one.
Yeah, it's God's country, that's for sure. So sustainability plan, this is our 1-year gap plan. If you remember, we were set to update the strategic plan and just took a year because of COVID. And we set out some real basic goals on getting things back up and running and getting things to a stable point. And I think we're well on track. If you look at the report out, this is just 3 months worth of activity across the region. And if you go to page 58, you can see some of those numbers are actually recovering already. Juvenile circulation is actually higher than it's ever been as a percentage of circulation, which is interesting. Digital library is also, the checkouts are as high as they've ever been on a quarterly basis. The number of new users isn't quite as strong as a year ago, but if you remember a year ago, we were only digital. So it's going to be interesting to see how the next quarter's statistics unfold, because quarter two of 2020 was when we were the most closed. So, I think we'll continue to see some recovery. Borrower numbers are a little concerning. We have not yet hit a plateau there, but we are also entering summer reading program, and we do have libraries actually doing class visits and doing that virtually. So they're doing online library card registration with classes, even if the classes can't come to the library. We do have some classes actually coming as a group to the library in a few select locations where that's possible. So staff are doing as much as they possibly can to work within the boundaries of their schools and their communities to get kids connected with reading this summer. You can see on a branch basis, the number of residents, borrowers by library and how that's changed over time. K Kimball is one worth noting. They are one of the few places where it's increased, but I shouldn't be surprised with a brand new building. There's been a lot of activity there. St. Michael is also a place where we're seeing some increases, and that's showing up more in the circulation area. And the other thing I wanted to mention here, as we start going into the next strategic plan, we're hoping to have a draft in front of the board, hopefully by July. And we are going to try to pare down to a handful of stats instead of pages and pages and pages of stats, which is tough to do with so many moving parts. But the models we're looking at are key performance indicators and objectives and key results. We're not really sure exactly how that's going to play out yet, but we think that's going to be a more effective way of communicating how things are changing. And the last page of the stats I wanted to point out was on page 63. That shows you through the end of March, the number of libraries that had actually increased year-to-date circulation. And March last year was when we closed the library. Mid-month. So most of the libraries are
more
than they did a year ago. And I expect that will continue to grow as we move into this next quarter where a lot of things were closed. But here is where you can see St. Michael's really ticking up. They built a brand new splash pad right outside the library, and they're going to have an open house there fairly soon. I expect that it will be a very busy summer in St. Michael with the library being open and a brand new splash pad across the lawn. They don't even have to cross the street. So it will be a really fun place to be. Any questions on the sustainability plan? Okay. The last point I will point out, and I mentioned this in Finance Committee, on page 66 is the HR annual statistics. And our head count is down by 23 year over year as of the beginning of the year. I expect that will come back a little bit. Some of that was a function of us not hiring substitutes and not replacing positions last year. But I don't know if we will get how much we will get back. We've been combining some positions too, so we're hiring one person instead of two where we can. But that's something that we are seeing, still a bit of a dip in, is just the number of people working at the library. And with social distancing still being a factor to some degree, we have chosen not to hire in some locations because there just isn't enough space in the library to have that much staff. And the usage, it hasn't come back 100% yet. Any other questions on that section?
Karen, when you have an open position, are you very limited on the number of applicants you have, or how are you seeing that?
Depends on the location. For example, in Elk River, where we're closer to the Twin Cities area, our wages aren't as competitive across the border. So it has been harder to fill positions like the Library 8 opening in those locations. And it's really been hit or miss. We filled some in St. Cloud, and the first time we posted, we ended up reposting. And then the second time we posted, we got a decent pool. So it's very sporadic. What we aren't seeing, though, is a return of the retirees to those library aid jobs. We're just not seeing the number of applicants who we had typically been recruiting from to fill some of those jobs, because most of our jobs are part-time. So the people we're recruiting are people who only want to work part-time. And there's not as many of them as there used to be.
Other questions for Karen?
I just had one question on page 59. Why do we not spell out St. Cloud, the saint in St. Cloud? It just puts it in a different spot. Not that it's a big deal, but.
You know, some of that is a function of the way our ILS. St. Cloud at one point was HQ on everything, so sometimes it'll be in the H's too.
Okay. On that page, it's that way, and Saint is spelled out. So anyway.
Thanks for catching that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else for Karen with all the reports under number 9? Hearing none, we'll move on to our committee reports, the Finance Committee. I'll turn this over to Ed.
Hey, we met at 5:30 and we had the audit presentation, which was approved, and then the letter of credit, which is kind of ordinary things that go on every year. Not a lot of changes from what you all heard from the audit. I guess I'll move for approval of the finance report.
A second?
I can second that.
Any questions for Ed? Hearing none, Patty, thanks for calling the roll.
Surya.
Aye.
Jane.
Aye.
Mary.
Aye.
Melissa.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Lisa.
Aye.
Mike.
Aye.
Lee.
Aye.
Thank you. Ed.
Aye.
Randy.
Aye.
Okay. How about the Fund Development Committee? I'd welcome a report from Jane, Mary, or Lee.
How about Brianne?
Or Brianne.
I certainly can. Sorry if you can hear my dog in the background. We met a couple months ago. We have been meeting quarterly for the Fund Development Committee, and we ended up going through our fundraising plan analysis that is 2018 through 2021. And so we will be looking into our next plan for 2022 to 2025. And we also welcomed a guest speaker to talk about planned giving with our last meeting. So really diving into the evaluation process, very similar to our strategic plan as well. So we will likely, as Karen had mentioned, present our fundraising plan after the board sees our strategic plan. Otherwise, I do not think that there was anything additional. However, any of you three can think of something. That was our last meeting.
Summer reading program did well.
Yes, we didn't talk about that in our fund development committee. I know that within later in our board meeting, I think I'm addressing our summer reading program.
Yes. So anything else Jay, Mary, or Lee want to add from the fund development committee?
I just have a question. Are we going to come back together in live, or what's your thoughts on that, Brian?
I think, of course, I don't have it in front of me that our next meeting was in July. So I'm thinking, depending on the feelings of the board and our committee members, that includes the major donors, we can gauge on how everybody feels towards whether that be in person or virtual, and then kind of go from there.
One more question, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Brianne, major donor means what and how many?
On our fund development committee is Bernie Burns and Mark Thielen. So those are the two major donors that are $1,000+.
What's $1,000, right?
Correct. Yep. And those are our two donors represented in our committee.
So we have two. No others.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments regarding fund development? We will move along to item number 11 on your agenda, the proposed Great River Regional Library Board Code of Conduct. We have this on the agenda tonight. Can go either way. It can be a first draft if people have a lot of comments, questions, or changes that they'd like to see. This was fashioned, modeled after Stearns County and Morrison County codes of conduct. So it's kind of our first chance at it. So any comments or questions or concerns?
I guess we in Benton County looked at this and we're in the process of adopting the same thing. And Stearns County did a really good job of presenting or of doing this up and that. So I think it's fine on everything that's in there. That would just be my take on it.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this is George. I agree with Ed's comments. I think it's pretty good.
Madam Chair, I think it's really good too.
Madam Chair, can I make a comment?
Certainly.
So with the stuff on social media and stuff, I think one of the things that some of the other things that I'm a part of is we're trying to say that even if you're a board member of a certain organization, even on your personal page, the views that you represent about certain things can backfire in terms of the organizations that you belong to, and you need to be careful about that for the social media stuff. Is there something that we can add in regards to that, that members need to be aware that they are part of an organization and that they have to uphold the morals and values of that organization, and even in their personal space, not say something that goes against that?
Karen, do you have any comments on that? I know we have social media policy for staff.
Right. This is really written specific to the code of conduct within meetings, but we can make it broader if the board chooses. I don't know what other examples are there that we could follow as a government entity, but we could look at it. I know there is a distinction for elected officials too, sometimes.
Any other thoughts about the social media piece? Like Karen said, I mean, the first front page of this is just talks about kind of who we are. And then the second page for me discusses or encapsulates how we're going to be when we're together in meetings.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yes, I think, you know, the purpose of this, as I read it, this part with the conduct is basically restricting it to meeting conduct when we're all together. If we're going to open this up beyond that, the scope, then it opens up a whole, you know, vast variety of things that we could be addressing. So I think we either keep it to meeting conduct or we open it up on a broad scheme, and then that brings in a whole lot of other things. That's a cause for a bigger discussion, I think, unless we want to leave it at what the intent was for just meeting conduct.
Now, Madam Chair, this is George. I agree with that. I think that if we do goofy things in our personal lives, the Board of Trustees will find out about it as a forum and we'll be chastised internally. So I think there's a self-policing mechanism here. If we're gonna be foolish in our personal lives, we're eventually not gonna be on a board like this. So I don't think it's necessary to add it in.
This is Ed, and I would agree with George and Mike on that. That I think it would get too broad and too, how should we say, into the woods if we went on our went out on our personal life. And I agree with George that somewhere it'll be self-policing.
You know, okay, Jane?
I just had one comment. One of the people that I wrote a thank you note to from Fund Development requested my friendship on Facebook, and I did not feel comfortable accepting that. So we kind of had a discussion in the Fund Development meeting about, do we accept people? You know, I just ignored that she had asked to be my friend. So it was just kind of like, this is as Mike said, another vast amount of area that we could cover. And like, are we going to tell people you can't accept friends or you have to accept friends from the library? And it was actually an employee of the library that had requested my friendship after I wrote the thank you note to her. So that was kind of weird, very strange. And I just thought there's no guidelines for that, but I think we should keep it separate. This is the meeting rules. And as Ed said, if you're doing wild and crazy things on your Facebook, or George said, that we're going to be chastised later for it by the board.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I would point out too, with this board, we as an organization don't have control over who's on it. It's appointed by the counties. And so if something would happen like that, it would really fall to the individual jurisdiction as to whether it would had crossed a line and whether it would be addressed. And you know, we would certainly bring it to someone's attention, but that it may be outside the scope of what we can control with a code of conduct. I could check on it now.
I really like you bringing this up, Surya, because the whole social media aspect of all of our lives right now can be incredibly destructive. So I appreciate bringing it up in the awareness of it. I don't know that it fits for this right now, but I do agree that if anyone is going to go off and do something incredibly inappropriate, there's potential that they would be asked to not be on this board anymore, I'm thinking. And we could work that through counties if we needed to for the commissioner piece. But I think we've all served on entities now that have that person that is on Facebook or on social media quite a bit. And it has rubbed us wrong in different ways. And, you know, I had a personal experience of a colleague, and I just had to call them on it eventually. But I think for purposes of this, we should stick to our meeting decorum, but I appreciate the awareness of the social media piece.
The difference between our board members that are not county commissioners and the county commissioners, I don't know about the rest of you, but I've had to sign numerous similar forms, and some that are filed with the state. So I feel that there's less compelling reasons, at least for the commissioner types here, than maybe for others. And I don't know. Let's wait until we have a crisis to come up with a solution.
Okay. I agree with you, Lee. But I think the crisis will take care of itself between amongst the counties if we do have one. So I think we've discussed this quite a bit, and we get the feel that, yeah, it's important, but I don't think it's something that we should be doing. So, Madam Chair, I'll move for approval of the proposed Great River Board of Code of Conduct.
This is George. I'll second.
Okay, we've got a first and a second. Any other discussion? On a side note, after watching The Social Dilemma, I'm getting off everything. I'm not going to Google anymore. It's a scary movie if you watch it, and it will make you think twice about how much you're on these things. So, any other discussion? Okay, Patty, I think this might be the last one on the agenda.
All right, Zuria.
Hi.
Jane.
Hi.
Mary.
Hi.
Melissa.
Hi.
George.
Hi.
Lisa.
Hi.
Mike.
Hi.
Lee. Lee.
Hi.
Ed.
Hi.
Randy.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, Karen and staff, for working on that. Moving on to item number 12, we have a number of new business topics. So starting with 12.1, the summer reading program campaign update. I think Brianne is going to start with this one.
Yes, and I am actually going to share my screen here. Let's see, but you don't need to look at this. I wanted to give an update on both the marketing communication end as well as our fundraising end. And so far for our 2021 summer reading program sponsors, we have at the $1,000 level, Bernatello's Foods, Central Minnesota Noon Optimist Club, Infinite Eye Care, in the St. Cloud Times. For 750 level sponsor, St. Cloud Industrial Products, and 500 sponsor is St. Michael Albertville Women of Today and Quinlivan and Hughes. So we started within fundraising doing sponsorships instead of sending out a mailing for smaller dollar amount donations. This also gets our businesses and organizations involved in the communities instead of individual donors. So these donors or sponsors will be recognized on our webpage, on posters in the library, and get some extra attention as well. In regards to, well, I suppose within sponsorships, you also in your board packet received the sponsor form. So sponsors, yes, Lisa has it there. And so you can either become a sponsor on the website, or as she had pointed out, there is our sponsorship form, and that details what each sponsorship level entitles the business or organization to, and goes in depth on the importance of the summer reading program and the impact, which is really what our donors are looking for when supporting the library. So if you know of a business or organization who is interested in supporting early literacy or the public library, this is a great opportunity for them to be a part of the library, and also to get extra recognition opportunities as well. So you can feel free to share the form that is in your packet. Otherwise, if you would like a PDF copy, it is again here on our G River website. In regards to marketing and promotions, we are doing something brand new this year, which we are all excited about, and it is lawn signs. So as lawn signs have been popular during the COVID season, this is a way not only to have our signs or mini billboards throughout neighborhoods, but also gets the SRP registrants involved and excited as well. So when a child registers for summer reading program, they will be offered to take one of these home to proudly display in their yard. And so each branch received 50 of these lawn signs. And on a first come, first served basis, we will see how much traction it gets this year and kind of go from there. Last year, we did billboards. And this year, our big new initiative that we think is going to be successful and more exciting for our kids are lawn signs. We as well are, of course, doing newspaper ads. So you can look for a newspaper ad just like this one in your local newspaper the launching week of the program. So the week of June 7th, this is in all of the newspapers. We have seen within communications and from hearing from patrons that especially in our smaller towns, newspapers are quite huge. Lots of people end up seeing ads, programs, etc. through the newspaper. So that is a significant return on our investment through that media channel as well. And so that is the overview of both fundraising and marketing for the summer reading program. Are there any questions in regards to either?
It all looks great. Oh, Melissa.
The kids are going to love those signs. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be really, I want a sign for my yard.
I do. Me too. That's one of my favorite books. Any questions? Thanks for all your work. It's going to be great. 12.2, a preliminary 2022 budget discussion. Page 73 in your packet, Karen.
Thanks, Lisa. So this is the first time the full board gets to see the preliminary budget in detail. We won't be passing a budget tonight. That's what happens in July. So after tonight's meeting, we'll look at it one more time in Finance Committee, and then the full board will pass it. So just to give you an overview, this was built through our base budgeting process. We ended up bringing over, if you look on page, let's see here, 75 in your packet, you can see how the revenues lined up. So we brought over the $401,000 from last year's surplus as a revenue line into the 2022 budget. And then we also anticipated that fines revenue would decrease and interest revenue would decrease. The other big change is
personnel went up because we do have union contracts already in place. We did incorporate those wage increases into the budget proposal as is. That happens a little differently every year. And then the other big expense from that's different from last year is we had $63,000 in additional automation costs this year. So things like the self-checkout maintenance, the acquisitions module and Horizon media scheduler, things that had already been approved, those are actually hitting the operating budget on a year-over-year basis now. So those were the increases. The net change in total is partly due to us trying to bring down the total amount of the county share that's being paid in, knowing we have a fairly healthy reserve. So in addition to that 2020 surplus, we added $315,218 in cash reserves into the budget as well. So that is not included on the unassigned fund balance sheet that we looked at earlier. That's an additional spend down of that amount. And we will need to develop a spend down plan for that, and that'll be brought forward in July. Anticipate it'll cost us about a total of $800,000 over the course of 5 years to spend down that $315,000. So it's just something to be aware of, but we should be fine with the way the budget's been tracking so far. The other things that got incorporated into this budget that you should be aware of is Sartell is included in here as is. We are in the midst of contract negotiations with the city of Sartell around GRL to go. That contract set to expire at the end of the year, so that dollar amount that's budgeted could change. We do have a benefit reopener with the union contract at the end of this year. We don't know what the benefits increase will be, but there likely will be an increase. So we'll probably have a closed session about that in June just to talk about it before we pass the budget. But there won't be a lot of certainty about what we're budgeting for until we get closer to the end of the year. State funds, we do have a regional library basic system support bill that's at play at the Capitol right now. If that passes out of the education bill, which may or may not happen at this point, it could mean an increase for us from state funding, but we don't know that for certain. If it doesn't pass, we won't know the amount we receive from the state until September. So we will be passing a budget guessing on that $1,596,000 that we've put in there. That's the amount we received last year. So that's just what we used as a placeholder. It does fluctuate. Interest revenue is down. What we've put in here is probably not what we will collect, but we don't know what that will be. The interest rates that we had a couple of years ago are just not coming back yet. We're hoping that they do start climbing up, but it's something we're keeping an eye on. And then the other thing the board did, and we'll be hearing presentations on both of these, was pass two department budget requests. One was to eliminate fines as a revenue source going forward. And the other was to add additional open hours in the budget. And I'll be going into detail on the open hours piece later on. Jamie will be doing a presentation on the fines change for your information. But just know that fines revenue last year, we did not collect nearly what we thought we would in the budget. We budgeted a lot higher with the libraries being closed and circulation down. That was substantially less, and we still ran a fairly substantial surplus. So it feels like this is a revenue source that in the future will no longer be something we can rely on anyway as trends change. More people are checking out digital materials. We don't collect fines on that. We see a lot of fines from our DVD collection. Things are moving to streaming. That's going to be a change. So it seems like this would be a good time to take that fines revenue down. That being said, the miscellaneous receipts line still will have a dollar figure in it because it also includes things like paying for lost materials or what people pay for copies when they use GRL to go. And it's really hard for us to figure out what that usage will look like in 2022 when things are just starting to come back now. So it's a best guess on that number, but that's also included in this budget proposal. On page 80 in your packet. It's got the yellow and green on it. you can see how the county shake out. We attempted to get all counties to $0 increase, but because the formula fluctuated, it wasn't possible to do that even with $315,000 in the budget. And so the finance committee passed it in this form, knowing that there are three counties that would see an increase. Sherburne County will have a $33 increase, which you can see on the bottom right. And then Todd would see a $4,500 increase, and Wright County would see a $28,000 increase. So even with those additional revenues coming over from our unassigned fund balance, we do have counties seeing an increase for 2022 based on the way this budget is structured right now. So would you like me to go into detail about anything more than I have? We will be talking about the fines change and the open hours change separately.
Any questions? Or comments? Okay, everybody just take a little stretch.
Yeah.
I'm gonna lose you. Everybody stretch.
Yeah. That was a lot of numbers in one.
Wave your arms. We have a few more items.
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't we move into fines free proposal discussion with Jamie.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity to share some information about what this proposal means, and because it is sort of, okay, what does fines-free really mean? And so we'll dive into that together here. I'm just going to get my screen share going. Okay, so you should see a cover sheet, fines-free proposal. I want to be respectful of your time, so I'll run through the information and take questions at the end. Brandy, my colleague, the lead patron services supervisor, also helped to put this information together, but she was unfortunately unable to join us this evening. All right, so digging right in, let's start with why. Why go fines free? We are interested on the whole about improving access and eliminating barriers to library service. So essentially we want to make the library easier to use. As Karen had mentioned earlier tonight, this was a recommendation that came out of the DEI work group in February 2021 and was also vetted by the leadership team. So we want to increase access, particularly for low-income families, and we also want to make it easy for folks to visit the library on their own schedules. In areas where fines have been eliminated, it increases the goodwill, kind of poo-poos the stereotype of libraries being stuffy places full of rules and shushing. And we want to increase circulation. That's what we're here for. We want to get materials into people's hands. Studies show that fines are not an effective stick. People who are going to be late are going to be late. And, you know, I work at the library, I still get fines, but, you know, it happens to the best of us because life happens. But on the whole, library service is a social contract, and most people want to do the right thing most of the time. As Karen mentioned as well, it's a less reliable revenue source that we need to start weaning ourselves off of. Digital materials don't have fines. As Karen mentioned, DVD circulation is also decreasing, and that is our highest fine rate at $1 per day. What I've noticed is that the pandemic has sort of accelerated some changes that we know were on the way. You know, less materials being released on DVD, and I don't anticipate that we'll see that changing anytime soon. Last, Commissioner Linsmeyer also referenced the real cost of some of the things that we do
it takes a lot of time and effort and energy to collect a small amount of money. And this could free staff up to do the really meaningful work that brings us to the library each day. We don't come to the library to collect fines. We come to make real change in people's lives. So fines free is also a national trend. I like to do my research. I'm a librarian. I'm not going to jump off a cliff just because everyone else is, but it's really good to see what our peers are doing. St. Paul Public Library was a pioneer in this area in terms of moving toward fines free. They did that in 2019. Our colleagues to the south in Rochester went fines free in summer 2020. Pandemic, why not? Washington County to the south and Kitchigami Regional Library System to our north have never charged fines, and they have lived to tell the tale. It's also in the news right now. These are all links to some stories, and if you're interested in learning more about what's happening nationally, I'm happy to share those with you. So what is it that I actually mean by fines free? We want to eliminate charges for the days that an item is overdue. So essentially late fees, but it's really hard to say late fee free. We also want to eliminate lost processing fees. You get hit with a fine and then you get this lost processing fee and it just doesn't feel very friendly. However, we are still holding people accountable. So what will we collect? We'll continue to collect fees and charges on item costs. So if you damage an item, unfortunately, it is you break it, you buy it. We don't accept replacement pieces. We actually ask for the funds back. We will continue to assess collection fees, revenue recapture fees, and I'll go into detail on that in a moment, as well as some of the service fees for things we do like proctoring. If you need to have monitoring for an exam, lost library cards and copies. We are already halfway there in that we went fines free for juvenile and young adult materials in summer 2019. Something that is really interesting is Karen mentioned that juvenile circulation got a boost. This happened in 2019, and to my surprise, it continued into 2020 despite the pandemic. So in quarter one 2019, 34% of our total circulation was driven by juvenile print. It raised to 38% in 2020. And for quarter one of 2021, we're at 42%. It's hard to say if it's correlation or causation. It's probably correlation, but I think it's a relationship that we really need to pay attention to. The feedback has been phenomenal. In addition to increased circulation, we get positive comments from patrons. Staff really want to get the materials into the hands of children and everyone who needs them. At the same time, we did also expand the Read Down Your Fines program to all ages. So a picture is worth a thousand words. The graph on the left shows how miscellaneous receipts have declined over the past 5 years. So bearing in mind that this is fines, it's also copies. Fines and lost materials are the lion's share there. So we can see that this is not a trend line that is likely to reverse. On the right, this shows the relationship between the entire revenue line to the overall revenue compared to the miscellaneous receipts. So you can see it is a small sliver and it has been decreasing over time. One of the concerns that I've heard is, well, how do we know that things will come back? And we do have a system in place. So I'll briefly run through this. 3 days before a due date, if you provided the library with your email address, we do send out a pre-overdue reminder. When materials are 10 days overdue, we will mail a paper notice in the good old-fashioned snail mail saying, hey, this was due 10 days ago. You're getting fines. At 45 days, this is the magical time when items turn into pumpkins, overdue materials turn into lost materials. So at this time, the charge for the actual material is placed on the patron's account, and a billing notice is mailed. So this is, you know, things are getting serious. This would continue. When you have a balance of over $6 or over $1 when you're in person, your card is blocked. So that means even if you're at home and you're trying to use the digital library, you can't access your materials if you have over $6 or more in fines. We give you one grace in person. And if things escalate and you have a balance of $25 or more for 30 days, that account enters the collection agency process. We do pass those costs along to patrons. So $10 of a debt collect fee is added to the account. And as a last resort, we do use revenue recapture through the state of Minnesota, which will capture part of your tax refund if you're eligible for one to recoup the cost of lost materials. So we do have tools in place to make sure that materials come back. In terms of who has fines, you know, it's really curious. 14% of patrons have fines of $1 or more. You know, when you think about the bell curve, it's a few people. When I dug into the information, I was really intrigued that 35% of our expired accounts have charges of a dollar or more, and it increases to 39% of those expired juvenile accounts. And again, I can't say that magic will happen, but there is a good chance that those folks will come back if they don't have to worry about fines. There's a lot of research out there to indicate that families in particular, parents are very leery of having their child check out materials if there are late fines, especially when kids can't come to the library on their own, etc. I also want to point out that with the Read Down Your Fines program, we did waive costs of fines, not lost materials. And this is all donation funded. So there's a big appetite for patrons who can give to support a program like this to make sure we get materials into the hands of patrons. So that's a lot of the why. There's some of the how we still will need to figure out. We can improve messaging regarding the actual costs. What am I responsible for? Potential additional notifications to remind patrons to return items. And there are other tools in the toolbox too, if we need to look at limits, because we want to make sure that this is equitable to all. So giving those who need a boost, but also not negatively impacting the patrons who are loyal and get their materials back on time. So with that, I will take any questions, or we can move to the next presentation and take all of the questions at the end in the interest of time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Jamie. Any questions, folks, for Jamie?
Madam Chair, this is Randy. Maybe we can just finish her thing and then I'll ask a question. How's it? Finish her presentation, then I'll ask a question.
Okay, I think Jamie's done with her piece. We are going to have another.
I'm sorry. Yeah, my question is, all right, again, we're talking about these fines. Well, if we look at our revenues that we took in for the past 5 years, we're averaging almost $350,000 a year for fines and miscellaneous. What would we do to offset this if we would, as the board would say, okay, no more fines? So what else could we generate money to offset this? Do you have a plan?
I have an observation. That is not, if it was in a private business setting, we would be measuring what it costs to generate that money. And I'll go back to my original contention. I'm not going to send staff on a task of figuring out all the time and the hourly rate and all this stuff on what we stick into this effort for what we get. But in short, I'm going to be leaving real soon here, but in short, I'm in favor of eliminating the fines because it's apparently it's a dying horse. But I would throw out the challenge to Jamie and Brianna. Could you come up? Let's change the psychology on this. Instead of developing a punitive plan for folks to return resources, is there an idea or a plan? I don't have one, okay. But is there an idea or a plan that we can come up with that is an incentive to return items? Don't know, you know, is there a contest? I don't know. But we see we've given fines a hell of a run. Let's see if we can go some more creative directions.
Madam Chair?
Okay. Ed, so Randy asked a question. Lee made a comment. I kind of want to let staff respond.
Well, mine would be in relation to Randy. I see where Randy's coming for this, and we've heard a couple of times about the amount of time and effort that goes into collecting fines. So I'm the advocate of then, so, okay, we have extra staff and extra time. Are we going to eliminate one position, one and a half positions? How are we going to, that would be an offset to where we're going. We do this all the time. Private sector does it. Everybody does it. So we just don't eliminate fines and do business as normal. That would be my comment.
So let's let staff respond to this now a bit.
You want to go, Jamie, or should I? Go ahead.
Well, I just want to say to Commissioner Winsher, while we have anticipated receiving upwards of $300,000 in fines revenue, that's not actually what has come in over the past 5 years. And I don't think it's realistic for us to continue to expect that level when we're seeing shifts in how people are using the library's services with the move toward digital. We have also had a surplus, and I think that our donors are very generous as well. And there are ways that we can leverage fund development as needed. There's a big appetite to read down your fines. Campaigns or appeals have been very successful. And so I feel really confident that staff can continue to meet patron needs. And instead of having those awkward conversations across the desk that are punitive in nature, finding ways that they can actually make a true difference in people's lives. So Karen, I'll let you, if you had anything else that you wanted to add.
Well, I think it's partly in response to Ed and Randy's comment, and also these, there's definitely some streamlining that will happen. It's impossible to know what that would look like on the front end of setting a budget. So, you know, I don't want staff to hear the message, we're reducing fines, and so we're laying people off, because that's not what we're doing. But we're different from a business in that we don't generate revenue and then hire more people. We generate more activity and we may have a flat budget. And so the same mechanisms don't always work, but we have a strong track record of making changes that make efficiencies and then staffing accordingly when we have openings through attrition. And I think that's why we're seeing our month over month costs coming down. I mean, 2020 was an exception, but you could see that those costs have come down over time, and it's by doing it in a smart way. We do what makes sense for the patron, and then we use those opportunities as they arise to streamline.
Madam Chair, can I make a comment?
Yes.
So again, more and more for stuff that I have appointments for, I'm getting text reminders. And is that something that we could incorporate? Because a lot of times email go to spam or junk, or your email changes, or you have multiple emails that you don't check frequently. Most people obviously have a cell phone, and if they are willing to share it, could we consider adding a text reminder? Because I think that for me is very helpful. And, you know, I always kind of see it and then I put it on my agenda. Okay, there's a text for this appointment or something else, just a reminder. So I think that would be very helpful.
Thanks, Surya. At this time, we haven't spent a lot of effort looking into it, but there are potential other offerings with messaging we can look into. And currently, most cell providers do have a way that you can convert your email into text. It's a little bit of a hack around the system, but local library staff can help out with that as well.
So I'm keeping an eye on our time. We're scheduled to be done about 7:30. So I want to be respectful of people's schedules tonight, but also want to make sure we cover comments and questions on this piece. So are people available to hang on maybe 10 minutes past 7:30 so we can finish up 7:40? Okay.
I'm going to unplug right now, but I like the direction the conversation's going.
So Lee, before you unplug, I just want to, I really appreciated your comment, kind of the carrot versus the stick approach. I believe that this is a paradigm shift and a philosophy shift. And for me, it speaks about outreach and relationships with our patrons. So I'm all for it. I trust staff and the research you've done, and think that this is going to, just with the whole juvenile piece, I want to watch those numbers like Jamie indicated. I think we're going to see payback somehow with this, with our communities and our patrons. So other questions or comments?
See you later. Thank you. Bye now.
Have a good night, Lee. Any other positive or negative challenges? What's churning in your mind about this? Let's get whatever we can to staff tonight. Does it sit well with you, or doesn't it?
It does.
Mary says it does. It does. Do you need another stretch? Are you awake?
I agree. I think it's a great idea. We went to it at the element at our elementary library several years ago, and I think it's a great move.
I like it.
Jane has a thumbs up.
Whatever we can do to get people to read, is that's our job.
Zuria has a thumbs up. Okay, Jamie, is that enough for you tonight?
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. And if any questions or ideas arise, you know how you can contact me. Thanks for the consideration.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks, Jamie. Karen, additional hours, open hours proposal discussion. This is another one. She's going to need some feedback from us. So
yeah, most of what you need to know is in the packet. So I'm hoping some of you took a look through that. Finance Committee has heard this already. This proposal came forward from Mr. Dave Kirchery, who suggested we try adding open hours across the region. in order to increase usage as part of our recovery. As we started looking at the budget and I saw how the numbers were lining up for the counties, I took a closer look at our wage base. And in the budget itself, while the proposal's been passed by the Finance Committee, we did not add dollars to the budget to support it because we have, at least when I last looked at it, about a quarter of a million in dollars in positions that were unfilled at the time. So it seems like if we are doing this, we would be able to absorb it within the existing personnel budget because of the amount of vacancies we see on a year-over-year basis. That being said, we aren't sure that we would do this everywhere right now. And that's part of what I'd need feedback on. We aren't sure in going into the current environment, what would make the most sense. In the packet, you can see some of the excerpts from our library development plan that was passed in 2019. Kimball's the only location where we haven't added open hours where we said we would consider it. So that would be one that I think would move forward, assuming we could figure out what would make sense there. Mm-hmm. The other locations, we had 13 of them that changed their open hour schedules at the beginning of the year. That's on page 93. And then we do have a contract in place with the city of Elk River for additional open hours right now. So we're not really sure how that would all fit together either. So I guess, what are your thoughts on this proposal as we start moving forward? I anticipate we'll pass the budget in July, but we'll need to take that next 6 months to figure out actually what would make sense in January. The unknowns are kind of huge right now. We don't know that like people are necessarily coming back or that they'll be coming at the same time of the day that they normally would. So any input you might have on this proposal would be helpful.
Madam Chair, this is George. I just kind of have a basic question. Is there a demand or request from people for extra hours at certain places? Or is this, why are we considering this, I guess, is my question.
Well, the consideration came forward because initially of a commissioner request to take a look at it. We have a couple of locations where there have been requests. Kimball is one of the primary examples. I think St. Michael has come up pretty frequently with the amount of growth that city is seeing. And I know Elk River would want more, but, you know, the other question we have is whether could we staff it? Because we are already seeing some struggles with filling the current positions. So are there ways that we could staff it? Are there ways that we could use the existing staff to stretch the open hours because activity has changed? You know, those are the questions we just don't have answers to yet. But there is not a huge demand for additional open hours. Just go straightforward, universally.
I read through this and chatted a bit with Karen. I was a little concerned with timing of it all, just because we're just kind of opening now with the whole getting closer to post-COVID, and we don't even know who's going to be coming through the doors. So it was a timing piece for me that, similar to George, are there places that are asking for it? I would really defer to staff a bit and patrons. And I don't have a good sense of that. So, and I think the timing with us moving into a post-COVID situation, I would possibly revisit this in like 6 months.
Listen, Ed, Lisa, you kind of read my mind that I don't feel we'll get a true picture of the success or failure of this with where we're going. You know, this may be something that we need to do, but maybe we need to have 1 year of regular, normal operating stuff before we go to this to get a true picture of if it merits spending the extra money. Because if we move forward and we don't pick up anything, I mean, I'm going to look at it and say, well, this was a failure to do it, where we don't know, you know, and if we pick up a huge amount, well, is this where we would have been anyway, or is this post-COVID, whatever there. So that's where I sit on this. And I mean, I know, I think Dave that brought it forward, they had requests in some of his, in his county for more open hours. So I don't know. It's tough to really say. I mean, I think if we can make it work, it'd probably be great, but I want to see results too.
And Madam Chair, this is George again. For me, there has to be a demand. It has to be significant, not onesies and twosies saying, whoa, I really wish my library were open longer. It's got to be significant enough where it's worth it.
Madam Chair, speaking as somebody who uses the library, and to be honest, I use the Wade Park Library a lot for picking up materials, not coming to the main St. Cloud Library. I know a lot of patrons from Sartell and Wade Park use that library, which is a very small library with very limited and kind of awkward hours. So you really have to keep their card with you all the time to remember what hours they're open at. There has been requests that their hours need to be expanded. I've heard it from multiple people. So I do agree that we need to look at it, but I also agree with the fact that we need to look at the summer once we are open, see how things go, and then maybe revisit it. But I think that just we need to keep it on the agenda for, let's say, 6 months from now. We shouldn't just totally dismiss it, but maybe not right away as we are opening up.
Totally agree with you, Zaria.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mike.
And we brought this up a couple times, but it's kind of all about the patrons, I think, and their requests and interest in this. Do we have manual, like, comment cards? It's old-fashioned, I'm sure, if people physically walk in the library. Or is there something on the website that you can put a link to, hey, we're wondering your feedback on increased hours, and actually get true feedback from the patrons themselves throughout the region?
We do have both of those mechanisms in place. And we did ask about open hours in the survey that we did in 2018. There wasn't a universal, this is what we need anywhere other than Kimball. I would carve Kimball out because that was discussed quite a bit as they were building that new building. If we build this new building and we have more usage, will you give us more open hours? Was a direct question.
Madam Chair, it's Randy. And again, for Dave being a past sheriff, you know, safety becomes a thing too. So again, this would probably be something, because most of these libraries are owned by the city, you know, where we house them. So that would be something too that we probably have to go and talk to them, say, hey, okay, we're going to be open later in the evening. You know, granted, during the summers, it's nice, but I think we have to do a little bit more vetting on this before we even go forward on this.
And I think the challenge too is, if you ask people, do you want more open hours for your library, the answer is going to be yes. You know, exactly. And when we did all of the schedule adjustments at the beginning of last year, a number of branches did do open hour surveys on their Facebook pages, and that's how they got those schedules a little more consistent in some locations. So we've definitely been working toward that consistency issue in particular.
Okay, Karen, so do you think you have enough on this?
Yeah, what I'm hearing is, let's take a look at it. We'll leave it the way it is in the budget for right now and continue to evaluate.
I appreciate the input of all the board members, so thank you. Moving on to open forum, I'm going to kick this off a little bit. I'm thrilled about our Sherburne County Parks program. We've been able to partner with Great River Regional Library, and Jamie has been involved in this quite a bit on a story strolls in three of our parks, I think, or maybe even four. And we got a grant, and it's just been really fun. So stay tuned with that. More to come later, but a great partnership. My favorite, trees and books. Anyone else have any updates?
Madam Chair, it's Randy. I brought this up at the beginning. You know, again, maybe it's a Pandora's box, but I brought up, are we going to have a meeting in person next month? Yes, we are. But can we do it also virtually? I think that would be something that we can just table this for tonight and maybe bring it up at a finance meeting in July or something like that, and then see what happens. Other night, have a good month.
Thanks, Tammy. Randy, what are you what are you talking about, tabling?
Well, because I think you mentioned you wanted to bring this up to Karen about the Zoom possibly, or having this both where we could have a Zoom and a person. Did you not? I don't know. I'm not for sure if that's what you meant, but I thought you wanted, because we are not capable at this time to meet in person and have Zoom. And I thought that's what you were kind of talking about, that you wanted to have a discussion. And I thought, well, that may be a good one to discuss at a finance meeting.
So we don't know yet the details of those ARP funds. So I just was saying that possibly that's something we can look at. We don't know that right now. So I think I'll talk about next meeting in a little bit. Anyone else have county or personal updates that they want to share?
I have a question about the vacancy in Stearns County. Does it have to be someone from a certain area of Stearns County that you're trying to fill that, or is it just a vacancy?
I can answer that since Lee's not here. Stearns County has 5 board seats at Great River, so they historically have used the county commissioner districts to fill the seats. So they are looking for one specifically from District 1. And I did have an email conversation with Commissioner Carol Clark, who is from District 1, and she said she is in conversation with some individuals on filling the seat.
Okay. I just had someone who would be very interested and very good, who's very active in the Kimball, the Kimball Library, and was a media specialist in Annandale many years ago.
Well, she can certainly submit her application. They can decide what to do with it.
Thank you.
Thank you. So moving on, talking about our next meeting is scheduled for June 15th. And I'm going to recommend that be in person. Unless someone I think I'm going to recommend it be in person. We have a lot pointing toward that for us right now. I would like to all of us keep our ears and eyes open about this funding that's coming out to the counties, to the state, to schools, to see if there is ever money that we could use, and then we would choose as a board to and work with the city. It's very complicated in St. Cloud, so there's a lot of factors. But there is money. There's lots of money coming at a lot of us in different ways. So everybody keep your ears and eyes open to see if that's something that we could do with our boardroom, with the Mississippi room, to fit it so we can do the hybrid. Many of us are on entities that are doing that already now, and it's proven very helpful in many different situations. So kind of keep your eyes open. We'll see what those funding streams are going to be for, but let's plan our June 15th meeting in person. Good, bad, or ugly?
I'm for it.
Okay.
I'm okay great. With it.
Good. Well, listen, I thanks everyone for hanging in there and giving your best tonight, and have a great month. And we will see you soon, or see you in June.
Thank you.
With our business being done, we are adjourned.